We're on the bottom of Daf Samach Tes, Omid Aleph, and we're talking about the Mishnah, Velo Es Charuv HaMukav, Velo Sadin HaShikma. And the Mishnah establishes, at the very end of the Mishnah, that if a person sells a Sadeh, there are certain things that are not included in the field. Certain trees in this case that are considered choshuv, they're very important, and they set up what you call a shame sada bifnei atzma. And now we turn to Daf Samachtes Omid Beis. Minohani mil. How do we know this din in the Mishnah that if someone sells a field, even though he said, he declared, and it's written that way in the Shtar, he v'chol masha besocha mechurim, I'm selling everything that's in the sada, he does not include in that sale the charuv hamurkav and the sadin hashikma. These are two trees which are not included in the field. And as we said before, the reason for that is because these are very important trees. The shikma is a sycamore tree, and they have, although they don't produce fruit, but they're very good for wood. And you know, the owners of the fields would consider that very significant, the sycamore tree. And then there's the charuv tree, which was grafted. And even though the seller said explicitly that he's selling everything in the field, this is excluded from the sale. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rav, Amar Kra, the Pasuk says, by Avram Avinu, in the case of buying the field from Stay Ephron, Vayokam, Stay Ephron, Asher B'machpelah. The Pasuk reads, Asher, Rufnei Mamre, Hasodev HaMa'or Asher Bo, V'chol Ha'etz, Asher basode, Asher b'chol gvulo saviv. In other words, even though he didn't explicitly say what's included in the field, in the sale of the field, Avram said to Ephron, Nasati kesef hasode kach mimeni, but Ephron responded to him and he said, Eretz arbamios shekel kesef. He did not mention what's included in the field. He just said Eretz. Nevertheless, Avram Avinu was kone together with this field, kol ha'etz asher basada. The Pasuk says that he purchased, included in the purchase, was any trees in the field. Ach adayin, ma shenemer behemshech ha'posuk, asher b'chol gvulo. The next part of the Pasuk, Asher b'chol gvulo saviv, seems to be superfluous. Once the Pasuk had said originally, v'chol ha'etz asher basode, then we already derive the conclusion that trees that are in or within the bounds of the sada are sold. So Rav darshins that these extra words, asher b'chol gvulo, are coming to teach us which trees are included in the sale and which are not included in the sale. Asher b'chol gvulo, it means that the only trees that are included in the sale are mi shetzarech legvul saviv. That means trees that don't have the shem balem alehem. They're not considered choshuva trees. That's called tzarech legvulo saviv. Eitzim she'ein shem ba'aleim aleim kevan she'einom chashuvim u'kidei shelo ya'ar odom lomar she'em shelo u'bekarka shelo im nituim tzorech ba'al ha'etz lasos gvul svivam she'yedu she'em nituim b'toch sadeu. But kevan she'einom chashuvim harem b'chlal ha'sod v'nim karim. So it means that if you have those trees that are not chosh, I mean, the Bailim did not set up a boundary in order to specify that these were his trees, to identify them as his trees, they are not included in, they are included in the Sada. But on the other hand, the cases that we mentioned before of a Shikma tree or a Charuv HaMurkav, those are not included in the sale. They have a certain chashivas to them because they need a gvul saviv. Yatsu elu she'ein ein tzrichim l'gvul. I'm sorry, those that need a gvul are the eitzim that ein shein baleihem, and therefore, since they're not chashuv, anyone could come along and claim them for theirs. But in the case of the eitzim chashuvim, einam tzrichim gvul. Ein tzarich lasos gvul svila. Why not? Kevan Shehem Eitzim Chashuvim, since they're very significant, Shem Baleim. Everybody knows who planted them, where they were planted, who they belong to, and therefore they're considered a Sadeh B'fnei Atzma. They're not included in the field. And once we derive from this pasuk that a Charuv HaMurkav and a Sadeh HaShikma are considered a Sadeh B'fnei Atzma, is therefore we know that whenever he says he v'chol mashiv v'tocha mucharin, is the charuv and the shikma are not included in the sale because those are considered a sada b'fnei atzma. Omrav mesharshia saviv, from the word saviv, that was an also an extra word in the pasuk, mikan l'mitzarim min haTorah, that when a person buys a field, he buys the mitzarim around the field. V'yesailonos hanituim b'toch ha-mitzarim. In other words, fields are generally separated from each other with these boundary lines. These are narrow sections of land, either higher or lower than the fields surrounding them, as the Rashbam explains here. And this pasuk is teaching us that when a person buys a field, he acquires also these pieces of land, any trees growing on them, and that's from the extra word saviv, that not only is the field sold, but also the strips of land around the field, which are called mitzarim, they are also being sold. They're included in the sale. Om Rav Yehuda, Haiman, Demazvin Ara Lechavre. Once again, Om Rav Yehuda, Haiman, Demizvin, Mazvin Ara Lechavre, Tzarech Lemichtavle. When a person sells a field to his friend, he has to write in the Shtar Mechira, Kni Loch, Diklin, V'Tolin, V'Hutzin, V'Tzitzin. You should buy for yourself, Dekolim, you acquire for yourself, Dekolim, these are palm trees, and Tloim, Ashesilim, Shenitu, Vadayin, Lo Godlu, and these are saplings that were planted but haven't yet developed, and hutzin v'tzitzin, and these are different types of species of palm trees, minei dekolim, v'afal gav dechilo kosev lehochi kani. Even though in such a case, even if he didn't include that explicitly in the shtar, these would be included in the acquisition. In other words, the sale of the field of the sod includes these trees within them. Afilu hachi, nevertheless, the shufar the shtarahu. It's, shall we say, advocated. We advocate in favor of including them in order to enhance the contract. In other words, by adding this clause into the contract, tzarech lemichle diklin, etc., etc., these are also included in the field. That's called shufar d'shtara. And that means that if there'll ever be some sort of a vikuach, he says, loshen zem yape es kocho shel ashtar, to strengthen the koch, the power of the shtar, shigamim yovo hadover lidei bezdin toim, even if some sort of a court that's not, shall we say, that's not reliable, or that are not scholars, they're incompetent, is nevertheless even though this Beis Din Tohen gets a hold of the shtar, einam yodim shegam b'mocher sod estam heilonis klum u'chira. This Beis Din is not aware of the fact that these trees are included in the sale, even though they weren't meant. Yizku yizakus alokeach, the buyer will acquire ownership on these ilonos because they're explicitly mentioned in the shtar. The Gemara now brings some cases in which the statement in the Mechiras Sada has to be explained and interpreted. Amar Leif, if the Mocher says to the Lokeach, I'm selling you Ara Vidikli, I'm selling you the Karka and the palm trees, is then we understand that there are two separate sales. One of them is the sale of the field with all the palms in it. And then he adds to it, and he sells to him the decollum, meaning palms that he has in a different location. Chazinan, therefore we take a look. E isle dikli, yoivle tre dikli. If he has decollum outside of the bounds of these fields, then he gives him to the seller to decollum. And the e lesle. But if he has no extra decolim beyond the bounds of the field, is therefore we interpret his meaning is that I'm selling you decolim she'ekne litzarchecha. Any palms she'ekne litzarchecha. Whatever I buy and you can use is zoven le'trei dikli. Then he'll be kone to decolim. And he'll have to buy two decolim for him in order not to be what's called mechusar amona. So this is the sugya now of mechusar amona. Now let's just say a few words about mechusar amona. So what happened here? He said to him, I'm selling you land and palms. In other words, it means palms is a minimum of two, and he intends to sell two palms besides any of the palms that are in the land that he's selling. And now we consider the circumstances. If he has other palm trees besides those in the land that's being sold, then he gives the buyer two of those palm trees, because that's the minimum of the decollum. And Ilesley, if he doesn't have any other palms, then he has to buy two palms for him and give it to him. And this is called Shufra. And this is called that he shouldn't be a mechusar amana, that his word is reliable, and even though these palms were not in his possession when the seller made this sale, nevertheless, he committed himself to buy two palm trees for the buyer. The imishtabde parikle tradikle. If he does own other palm trees, there's a shibud on these other palm trees. His parakle tradikle, he has to redeem these two palm trees on behalf of the seller. So Mirza Hashem, this sugya we'll come back to a little bit later on. So we're here on Daf Samach Tes Samach Beis. And if you like, you can count up one line before the end of the daf. There's a piece of Gemara before this that we'll fill in, God willing, later. It has to do with mechusar amon. If a person sells a field and he promises enough, something beyond that field to be included in the sale, so he has to make sure that he provides that. But now, we're going back to a halacha that the Gemara touched on earlier, and that is that if a person sells a field, amen, and he adds what's called a shir means an exclusionary clause, and he says, chutz mi ilano sheba, I want to sell you the field, but not the trees in the field, then the trees are not considered part of the field. And now the Gemara wants to know what trees is he excluding from the sale? Meaning, the premise of the Gemara is that
if he had, there are two types of trees. There are trees that are significant, and a person wants to leave those trees for himself. Mm-hmm. That's called a shirur. And then there are trees that are less significant, and he includes them in the sale. Omar Rav. Rav says that if a person sells a field and he stipulates chutz mi lono sheba, that I don't want to include in the field, in the sale, excuse me, the trees in the field, is kol sha'olim lo bechevel. How do we determine whether or not this tree was excluded, it's a choshevet tree, or was not excluded? It depends. We'll do the following test. Olim lo bechevel. If it's such a tall tree that the only way you can climb the tree is by using a rope, because otherwise he's going to endanger his life, that's considered a tall tree. And if it's a tall tree, that's not included in the sale. He wants to keep it for himself. Havi shir, it's considered an exclusion. It's outside the the pale of the sale. Kol she'ein olim lo bechevel. But if, on the other hand, the tree is so low that he can climb up and get the fruits of the tree without the aid of a rope, then that's not called a choshevet tree, and therefore he includes it in the sale. It's almost like it's bottled to the character. V'lo hafishir, and it's not excluded, but rather it's included. And here we turn to Daf Ayin Amud Aleph. Now the Gemara quotes what seems to be a second opinion as to how to classify a tree, whether it's chashuv or not chashuv. The Dayani Gola, the Rashbam explains that Shmuel and Karna, they were the basic, most important Dayanim back in the Gola. Amri, they're of the opinion, kol ha'ol sheha'ol kovsha. Do you have these oxen that are used for plowing, correct? And if a tree will block the yoke of the ol, is called the yoke of on the back of the ox, and when the ox does the plowing around an area, then when it hits up against the tree, what's going to happen? Who's going to win out in this collision between the yoke and the tree? So the first category is Sheha'ol Kovsha, that the ol, which is the yoke, is going to kovish. Kovish means it's going to win this battle. It's going to conquer its enemy here, and it's going to be able to continue moving. The ox is going to be able to continue moving and plowing around the trees in the field, and the tree itself will bend, will kowtow, so to speak, to the ol. And in that case, lo avishir, that's not considered a chashuvah tree, and that's not considered an exclusion. He didn't mean to exclude that from the field. As we said before, it's like batel, it's included in the sale. But kol she'eino ol kovsho, if in this battle, so to speak, this collision course between the yoke on the animal's back and the tree, the tree is going to win out. It's such a sturdy tree that it's going to block the yoke. The yoke is going to smack up against the branches of the tree and it's going to just completely get stalled in its place. That's considered a chosh of a tree. That's a sturdy tree. It can win the battle against the yoke. Havi shir, and therefore it becomes an elon that is included in the exclusion. That's the paradox here. When he said chutz mi lanosov, he meant to exclude this kind of a tree. So at this point, the Gemara wants to know, is there a machlokas between Rav on the one hand, on Samathes on the Beis, and the Dayone Gola that are quoted here on Daf Ayin Amud Aleph? They seem to be giving two different parameters to determine whether the tree is choshev or not choshev, whether it's excluded because it's batel to the karka, or no, it's a choshev. So the Gemara says, below pligi, they're not arguing. The Gemara explains that they're each addressing a different category of tree. Now, most trees are full of branches. Except the exception to that rule is the palm tree, called the dekel. The dekel, as you know, is a very tall tree, and there are no branches on the tree until you get to the very top of the tree. So in that case, when you want to describe the dekel as something chashuv, what you say is that the dekel is not just a young newborn dekel that's just been planted a month ago or a half a year ago, but it's a dekel that's already towering up to the sky. It's so tall. If you see it on the way down to Yom HaMelech, if you've ever gone, so you know that you have to climb up with a rope in order to get to the top. That was what Rav was addressing. V'lo pligi, they're not arguing. Ha bidikli. Rav is talking about a dekel tree. So he sold a field that, and the only trees in this field are dekolim, are these palm trees. And then when he was Mishayer the tall trees, the tall palm trees that are more developed, a little bit older, that you need a rope to get up to the top of the tree. That's what he was doing. If on the other hand, you can, you know, the palm tree is newly planted, it's not so developed and it's not so high, then in such a case, it's included in the sale. And it's not excluded by the shear, by the exclusionary clause. Whereas the Dayane Gola, that's Shmuel and Karna, they were addressing a different category of trees. And that is the rest of the trees. You know, not the palm tree. The palm tree is sort of the exception to the rule. Other trees are full of branches as you go up the height of the tree. And to determine whether the tree is chashuv or not, there we're going to distinguish between whether or not it's ma'akev, whether or not it prevents the yoke on the animal's back from hitting up, you know, and it pushes it back, or it doesn't. If it does not push it back, it means that the ol is able to be kovesh, meaning the yoke on the animal's back will push down the tree. It'll bend. The tree bends to the metal on the back of the animal. That's included in the sale because it's not chashuv. But if on the other hand it's ol kovsho, I'm sorry. If it's ein ha'ol kovsho, what I meant to say was that if the tree is so sturdy and it serves as such a barrier that it's going to, you know, when the yoke smacks up against the tree, the animal is just going to have to stop dead in its tracks. That's sheer. That's what he excluded because that's a chashuv tree. Boyinei Rav Acha bar Huna mei Rav Sheshes. You're going to see there are two versions of the question that Rav Acha asked Rav Sheshes. The first version is as follows. A man sells a field to his friend, and this field has charuvim in it. In English, I think we call it carobs. And they are merkavim. Merkavim means they are grafted, which gives them a certain strength and a certain significance to them. There are other trees in the field which are called shikma trees. We know it as sycamore trees. And very often they used to cut into the tree in order to get rid of its branches, and that would improve the growth of the tree. That's called sadne shikma. And a man sold his field chutz mi charov ploni. Now, keep in mind, the Mishnah has already established that if a man sells a field, then the charuvim hamurkavim, these grafted carob trees, are so chashuv that it's not included in the field. It's a separate entity. It's not included in the carob. And this guy, nevertheless, went ahead and he stipulated an exclusionary clause, chutz mi charuv hamurkav. But he said ploni, and he pointed out one particular tree. And that's what was written in the shtar. Or chutz mi sadan shikma ploni. Or he said, excluding this particular tree. Mahu, what's the din in this case? I mean, had he said nothing, then none of these trees would be included in the sale. So why did he then specify that this particular tree of that sort is not included in the sale? Was he meaning to tell us that Oso Charuv Udalokani, that one he excludes from the sale, Hashar Charuvim, but the other carob trees in the field, Kani? In other words, he meant to imply, let's include all the Charuvim in the sale, with the exception of this one. Odilmo Mishayt, no. Shar Charuvim Nami Lokani. Then we go back to square one, and we said that the charuvim, etc., are not included in the sale. And even though he specified one charuv, he did not mean to include all the other charuvim, the balance of the charuvim in the sale. And here the Rashbam wants to understand, so why did he bother singling out one charuv tree that was an exercise of futility, since anyway the Charuv tree would not be included in the sale. And the Rashbam says that I have a good answer according to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion that Mocher v'ayin yafu Mocher, that when a person sells something, he sells more than you think he wants to sell. And if he doesn't leave himself a derech, you know, a road, a path to get to that object that he sold, then now the mocher wants to say, but with regard to this charuv tree, we're not going to apply the principle of the ayin yafu mocher. I want to sell the tree, but I don't want to sell the derech. Not only do I want to exclude the tree, this charuv tree, but I also want to exclude the derech and allow myself a road to go there. That works out very well according to Rabbi Akiva. The Chachamim hold Mocher b'yayin ro yofu, which means that when he excludes something, he excludes even the derech. So why did this fellow, again our original question, say chutz mi sadan shikma ploni, chutz mi charuv ploni? It seems ridiculous that he said such a
thing. We don't seem to have an answer. Because he said nothing.
So there are two.
You see that the Arabs aren't included. Surely you include access to them.
Right, so that's the machlok between Rabbi Akiva and Chachom. According to Rabbi Akiva, this works out very beautifully. The reason why he specified one particular charuv is he wanted to retain for himself access. But according to the Rabbanon, how do we answer this question? Why did he specify one charuv tree and exclude it from the kinyan, since anyway all the charuv trees are excluded from the kinyan? So the Rashbam offers one answer, and Rabbeinu Chananel offers another answer. The Rashbam's answer seems to be something called shufra d'shtar, that sometimes when a person wants to make sure that there won't be any debate or any question when this case, if it ever comes to a bezdin, he goes out of his way. So there's one charuv that he wanted to guarantee himself beyond the shadow of a doubt that it wouldn't be included in the sale. He got a little bit nervous about it. So he said, I want to mention this particular charuv tree. I'm very attached to this tree. You know, it's a tree that I inherited from my great-grandfather. Other Mefarshim Rabbeinu Chananel say that no, what he meant to say was that I want to sell you the field, but I want to exclude a certain value in the field. Let's say the field is worth 1,000. He wants to exclude 100 from the field. Notice he wants a kickback of 100, so that the sale will only be a 900. So he said, chutz mi charuv zeh, which is worth 100. So we look at the charuv as its value. In any event, odil mashar charuvim nami lo kani. Omer leis, Rav Sheshes responded to Rav Acha, lo kani. The lokeach does not have rights to own, to purchase any of the charuvim. In other words, we go back to the original position as the Mishnah formulated that all the charuvim tree are excluded from the sale, and the shear is telling all of them. Ace fading Gemara Sakash from a brisa on Rav Sheshes. The brisa says that if a person says, my field is sold to you, chutz mi charuv ploni, with the exception of one particular charuv, chutz mi sadan ploni, one particular sycamore tree, lo kana. And the Gemara assumes my lot, doesn't it really mean oso charuvu de lo kana? Because, you know, the subject of this brisa is that particular tree, so it means that particular tree the seller did not sell and the buyer did not buy. Hashar charuvim kana, but the balance of the trees of that sort in the field are included in the sale. Amalei Rav Sheshes, no, that's not how you interpret the brisa. What the brisa means is afilu shar charuvim nami lo kani. When it says lo kana, what he means is lo kana any of the charuvim tree. And Rav Sheshes now wants to show that this is the logical way of interpreting the brisa. Teid, I'll prove it to you. De'ilu amar le, let's think of this logically. A man sells a field, and he says to the buyer, he says to the seller, sodai mechur lecha chutz mi soda plovus. I'm selling you this field with the exception of a different field. So what are you going to tell me in this case? You're going to tell me, ahi hu delo kani, that the buyer does not acquire ownership over that particular field that he excluded. But if there are other fields that the seller owns, he would acquire ownership? That's ridiculous. He only sold him one field. Obviously, he didn't sell him any of his other fields. So you're going to tell me because he said to him exclusive, he said excluding this field, it means that all the other fields are included? He only sold him one field. Ella, it's pshita, it must be simple to us, lo kana, that the sale is only relevant to that one that one field, the boundaries of which are included in the document. And when he said, and I'm not selling you another field, he had a special attachment to that field. Or maybe he needed a derech to get to that field. Hachanami, we're going to apply the same logic here to the person who said, chutz mi, charuv ploni, accepting this carob tree, is lo kana, then there's no kinyan, and the seller, and the buyer, excuse me, doesn't acquire ownership on any of the charuv trees. The Ika Diari, but there was another version of the question that Rav Acha posed, bless you, posed to Rav Sheshes. Boy mine Rav Acha bar hunami Rav Sheshes. If a person sells his field and he stipulates, chutz mi chatzi charuv plum, I want to allow myself to retain ownership on half of one particular carob tree, or chutz mi chatzi, with the exception of half of Sadan Shikma Ploni, of this sycamore tree. Mao, that's even more pressing that he meant to include the other half in the sale. What's the din in this case? And now the Gemara presents the two sides of the argument. Shall we say, Shar Charuvim Vadai Lo Kani? Certainly the seller had no intention of including all the other Charuvim trees in the sale. But Hamashashir be also charuv kani, but that which he didn't include in the exclusion when he said chutz michatzi charuv ploni, that is included in the sale, and the buyer acquires possession over half of that charuv. So again, keep in mind that in this new version of the question that Rav Acha asked, it was absolutely crystal clear that as far as the remainder, the balance of the charuvim in the field, they were not included in the sale. That's not even an issue. But the question is, what about the other half of this particular charuv? When he said that I want to leave for myself half of this charuv tree, does he mean to say, but the other half of the charuv tree I'm giving you, I'm including it in the field? And in the first sad, the Gemara says that Mashashir be also charuv, the other half of the charuv tree that he stipulated, chani, is included in the sale. Odilma, shall we say, afilu mashashir be also charuv nami lo chani, even the other half of this charuv, he wasn't koni. Which means that even though he went out of his way to stipulate that he wants to leave for himself half of the charuv, he really wants to own and exclude from the sale the entire charuv.
So why does he say half?
Then the question is, why did he say half? So I have here a note, and he says the following. He says, Hikshar Rashba, the Rashba asks the question, be omer chutz mi charuv ploni. There you could say, like the Rashbam had said earlier, that maybe he was saying chutz mi charuv ploni in order to guarantee himself, the seller wanted to guarantee himself a derech. Right. But in the case of chutz mi sada ploni, what could he possibly mean? Yeah. I mean, it doesn't make sense that he was saying, I want to leave myself a derech, and therefore he left for himself a chatzi charuv. So the Rashba answers, and this I think would reflect what we saw earlier in the name of the Rabbeinu Chananel, that when he said chutz mi michatzi ploni, kavanasa, what he meant to say is l'shayer beguf hasode kishir chatzi hacharuv. What he meant to say is that in the sale of the guf hasode, the sode itself has a certain value, he wanted to exclude a certain value, a certain percentage of the value of the field from the sale. And instead of stipulating a certain amount, in dollars and cents, he said to him, chutz mi chatzi charuv.
Is there another way we say an eye for an eye means monetary value of an eye? That doesn't mean the appearance, we're not saying the tree, it's not going to be the monetary value of the tree, the land the tree sits in.
So Rav Shesha says that the buyer has not acquired ownership even on the other half of that one charuv tree. Eisvei, and I'll ask you a kasha from a price in which he sold his field, chutz michatzi charuv ploni, chutz michatzi sadan ploni, sha'ar charuvim lo kana, implying that the the buyer did not acquire ownership over the balance of the karuvim, the other karuvim in the sodom. My love, sha'ar karuvim hu delo kana. What the Brisa wanted to point out is that the other karuvim are not included in the sale. Hamashashia bioso karuv, but that which was left out of the exclusion, meaning the chatzi karuv that he said, you know, that he meant to say kana, that you could purchase and you could acquire. And now, this is a stira, this is an explicit contradiction to Rav Sheshes, because Rav Sheshes says that the buyer doesn't acquire ownership on any of the charuvim, even on the other hand. Amalei, so Rav Sheshes says, lo, that's not how you interpret the braisa. Filu, mashashir, v'oso, charuv, even the other half that he didn't exclude, which means that he included in the sale, lo, kana, he also meant nami, Lokana wasn't included in the field, and that's how we interpret the Braisa. Tate, and I'll prove it to you, says Rav Sheshes. De'ilu amale, if a person says to his friend, the buyer, he says to him, Sode Machurul, I'm selling you my Sode, Chutz Michatzi Sode, one with the exception, the exclusion of half of another Sode, is Ahuhu de Lokana, either Kana, you're going to tell me that half is excluded from the sale, but the other half of the field is excluded. It's a different field. He never sold it. El Pshita. It must be the Lokani, and Hachidami here too, Lokani, meaning the Rav Sheshes points out that logically we're compelled to assume that if the field is outside the purview of the sale, then even though he said Chatzi, he doesn't mean to give him and include to him the other half of the field. Okay, now we start a new sugya. Boy, mine Rav Amram, mine Rav Chizda. Rav Amram asked the following question to Rav Chizda. Hamafkin eitzel chavero b'shtar. So there's a mafkin and a nifkad. The mafkin deposits an object into the hands of the nifkad, of the shomer. And he wants to guarantee that the shomer will not deny that he received this object, which could be an object of great value. So they wrote a shtar. And that star would indicate that in event that the shomer denies that he ever got this gold watch, you know, as a deposit, that the star contradicts him and says with two edim side on it that he indeed received that object. But in this case, Omar Lay, the Nifkat says to the Mafkid, Hizar Timbuklah. Yes, I received that object, but I already returned it to you. Mao, what's the deal in this case? Who do we believe? The Mafkid is saying, I never got it back. The Nifkad is saying, I already returned it to you. Me, I mean, should we say that we certainly should believe the Nifkad, the Shomer, to say that he returned it? Why? He has a legal. He has a very strong argument in his back pocket. The boy Omar Nenser. The law is that if a shomer, even if he's a shomer sucker who's paid for his watching, he says, Nensu, there were circumstances beyond my control, you know, lightning struck and killed the animal, he would be believed, Mehemon, and he doesn't have to pay for the lost object, because only a shomer is chayfonks, no other shomer is chayfonks. He's hashta nami mehemon now too, since he had in his back pocket the potential to claim Nensu, therefore we should believe him, even if he claims Hixatim l'cha, that I returned it to you. What's the tzad to say? No, he's not believed. Oh, Dilma, shall we say? The Omer Le, the Mafkin says to the Nifkad, Shtarka miyadi, my boy. If you indeed return the object to me, why am I still holding on to the shtar? Whenever someone returns something, like in the case of a lov and a malva, he gets the shtar back. You know, the shtar is a very dangerous tool in the hands of the toveh, of the plaintiff. Now, what the Gemara hasn't raised here is the issue of Shvur, because the law is that even had the Shomer claimed Nenas, that the object was destroyed in a lightning bolt, by a lightning bolt, he would still have to take an oath. So the Migu is a little bit weak over here, because Migu usually means, I had a clear-cut argument that I could have put forward, believe me when I give a more complicated argument, a less believable argument. But here, had he put forth the other argument, he would have still had to take a shvua. Omar Leiser of Chizda responded, Mehemon, that he's believed with this migul. So Rav Amram turns to Rav Chizda. Rav Amram was the one who raised this question. He says, let the mafkid say to the nifkad, shtarcha miyadi, my boy. Now, why does Rav Amram think that argument is so convincing that the Nifkad would not be believed even if he has a migul? And the answer, I believe, is, and this is the Rashbah here, and he's quoted in the note, that a shtar has a very powerful scope. Meaning the scope of the edus of the shtar includes any possible argument against the shtar. Whatever the nitba, the defendant, says in order to undermine the validity of the shtar, whatever argument comes up with, the shtar is always going to say, that's not true. And therefore, shtar, as edus, has the power of al pishnayin edim yokum dover. You know, the Torah says we rely on two witnesses. The shtar is like two witnesses. And if the nitba, meaning the nifkad in this case, claims that the shtar is invalid because I already returned the object to you, then the shtar yells out and screams, no, you didn't return the object. Why? Because the mafkid is holding on to the shtar. As long as the mafkid holds on, if he drops the shtar, it's a whole different story. That's a sugya bo mitzia about a found shtar. But as long as he's holding on to the shtar is a very powerful amalei. So Rav Chisda says, and according to you, you want to say that the shtar is very powerful. But what about the beagle here? You know, you got to consider that. You have to admit that if the nifkad, if the shomer would have said nensu, that it went up in a lightning bolt, it was destroyed in a catastrophic hurricane, me matzi omale, could the mafkid say to the nifkad, shtarchav yodi, my boy, why am I holding on to the shtar? Well, the answer is that holding on to the shtar doesn't prove a thing as far as whether the lightning struck and whether there was an onus is concerned, and therefore the nifkad would certainly be believed to say that it was an onus. It was circumstances beyond my control, and therefore due to those mitigating circumstances, I'm not chayv, I don't have to pay for that, I have no responsibility for those circumstances. So you see clearly that he has the ability, this nifkad, to be believed and protect himself with the argument that has credibility, nanas, even though the mafkid is holding on to the shtar, because the shtar says nothing about onus. And therefore he has a very strong bigu, and based on this bigu, he should be believed to say, hichzatim, that I gave it back. Amalei, so Rav Amram responds to him, and now we turn to the Ayin Amud Beis, sof sof. At the end of the day, so to speak, ki omale nensu lav shvua boy. Remember, I told you before that there was an element here that didn't appear in the equation, and that is that even had the shomer put forth a stronger argument of nenas, he would still not get away, you know, with murder. He wouldn't be believed with automatic credibility. He would have to support his claim with a shvua. And that's based on a pasuk in Shmos Chav Beis. I'll read to you the pasuk. It says, Shvuas Hashem Tia Ben Shnehem, that in every case of a shomer, no matter what argument the shomer puts forward to exempt himself from payment, he still has to take a shvuah. In fact, the shomer has to take three shvuahs. And one of the three shvuahs that he has to take is that I'm not holding on to the object because it was destroyed in a catastrophic fire. So now we're in a situation where Rav Chisda is on the defensive, because Rav Chisda is building all the credibility of the nifkad on the migu that he could have said onus. That's not a very strong migu. So Rav Chisda answers, Hachinami, my nema, when I told you before, Rav Amram, in answer to your question, that indeed the nifkad should be believed. We apologize for sitting here. Normally we sit there, but we couldn't get the lights on. So the nifkad is normally believed. What I meant in this case, the nifkad is believed to claim, Hichzatim, I gave back the object to you. My nema, what I meant to say was nema mishvur. In other words, the migu taina, the taina that he could have put forward, which is nenas, now transfers over credibility to the taina that he puts forth. And just like in the case of Nenas, he would be believed if and only if he took a Shvuah. So too, when he says it's Artim, he's believed with a Shvuah. But now that we add the Shvuah to the equation, we've equated the two arguments. The argument of the Nifkat to say Nenas with the argument of the Nifkat to say it's Artim. And this is the ultimate equalizer of both. Of both
times. If he needs a shvuah, why have a migu at all? Why have a migu at all?
Well, no, again, shtarchav yodcha, boy, if the mafkid would be believed because he's holding on to the shtar, as if to say the testimony written in the shtar confirms that this object was not returned to the mafkid, otherwise, why is the mafkid holding on to the shtar? If that be the case, then all the shvuahs in the world would not help the nifkad. The Nifkat is only be believed him because of the Migu, and if he's believed with the Migu, then he needs that Shvua to support his Migu claim, because the power of the claim he's putting forth can be no greater than the power of the claim that he could have put forth, that he had in his back pocket, namely men. So he would have to take
the Migu. Man would not be stronger. The Migu with the Shvua is stronger.
Correct. And that's a big problem. You know, again, there's a long discussion here about Migu with the Shvua. Normally a migu with a shvua is a very weak migu, and we don't rely on it, but Rav Chisda says no, we're going to rely on migu supported by a shvua. Lema bepluta dehani tanoi. Perhaps the machlokas here with regard to the din of Rav Chisda, where the nifkat is believed with hechzarti, is dependent upon a machlokas. Now the word desanya here is a problem. The Rashash says we have to take it out. Tosus elsewhere takes it out because the Gemara is about to quote a machlokes amoroyim, so it can't be desanya. Anyway, shtar kis hayotze min hayisomim. In other words, there's a shtar that was written by a malver. Okay, we'll see. It's a particular type of a malver, a unique type of a malver, to the father of these yisomim. So, in other words, the father owes money to the malver, and that's testified in the shtar. And now the father's dead, and the malver comes to, you know, banging on the doors of the yisomim with this shtar in his hand, claiming that your father owed me this money and it was never paid back. But what's a shtar kiss? This is a very unique type of shtar. The Gemara establishes in Bava Metzia that they made a takon of the chachamim to encourage people to go into business dealings with others. That if I put down the money and I appoint you as the manager of a certain asset, you know, to invest that money, then the money that I give you is split into two categories. So let's say it's 100. So I give you 100 and I say, would you please run my business for me and manage it? You become, so to speak, the manager of my business. So with that 100 is now split into two. Half of it is a loan, which means that you, receiving the money, commit yourself in an absolute way to return that 50. Okay? That means that no matter what happens with this ASEC, whether it's successful or has shown the opposite, you will return that 50 to me. That's the milva part of this shtar kiss. The other half is more complicated. That's called a pikadon, which means that the two of them, the malva and the person who's managing the ASIC, are going to share in the losses or the gains, the profits of this sale. Okay, I see we're about to start davening. So the Gemara now records a machlokes about this case of a shtar kiss. What happens? Dayani Gola Amri, according to this group called Shmuel and Karna, Nishba, the Baal Ashtar, that's the financier, you know, who invested his funds, he takes a shvua. And in the shvua, he takes an oath that the father never gave back that half that was a loan. Remember, we split up the shtar kiss into two elements, half of which was an absolute loan with an absolute commitment on the part of the father, the manager of the business, to pay back that 50. Vigova kula. And he collects that entire sum. Okay, kulo, here's a reference to the 50. That's according to Dayani Gola. But the Dayani Eretz Yisrael, that's Ravami and Ravasi Amri, they are of the opinion, Nishba Vigove Mechza. He takes the Shvua and he only collects half of the mos. The Kuli Alma, everybody agrees, Islahu Dinardoi. Everybody here agrees to Nardoi. Nardoi is the Gemara I mentioned before at the end of Bava Metzia. The Omer Nardoi, Hai Iska, when a person invests his money with a manager who's going to manage the business, Palga Milva, half of the money is considered an absolute loan with an absolute commitment to be repaid. In other words, if, let's say, lightning strikes and the money goes up in smoke, that 50% of the money has to be repaid to the financier, to the Baal Hashtar. Upalga, the other half, is a pikadon. The other half of the money is just like a deposit. Now, if it's a deposit, then the manager of the business he'll have to return that money if it's available. If it's not available because it went up in a catastrophic hurricane, which is called an onus, he never accepted himself responsibility for that half of the shtar kis, which is called a pikadon. Is my love b'haka miflegi? What are they arguing about? The Dayone Eretz Yisrael, the Dayone Gola. The Marsav, according to Dayone Gola, since the father himself would not be believed against the shtar to say that I gave you back your money, is therefore, even though the father has a migu on that half, that's a deposit of pikadon, he could have said nenas, it was destroyed in a fire. Is therefore matzi amarle, therefore the bala shtar is right to say shtar chaviyadi, my boy. And against the father's claim that he returned that money, which would be a claim that's supported by amigu, he would not be believed because there's a shtar in the hands of the mafkid, so to speak. Umar sover, but Dayoni Eretz Yisrael say lo. No, it's not true that even if this shtar was produced against the father, had the father be alive, the father would be believed to say, I gave back the money, the funds, because he has a migu, he could have said nenas on that half, that is a pikadon. This is exactly the issue of Rav Chisda. The Gemara answers, no, Amri, lo. That's not the machlokas here between Dayoni Gola and Dayoni Eretz Yisrael. The Kuli Alma Isle Rav Chisda, everybody agrees that the Nifkad, like Rav Chisda claimed, is believed to say with a migu that I returned the money to you or the object to you. I could have claimed nenas. But here it's a different Bahakamifli. They're arguing about an entirely different point, and that is Demar Savar. The Dayone Gola are of the opinion that here in this case, the claim that the money was returned is a weak claim. Why? Diem Isa de Pari. If the father had indeed, during his lifetime, returned that money, those funds, Meimar Havi Omar, he should have notified his children sometime before his death that he returned the money. Umar Sovar, Amor Malach Amavis, who the answer? Not everyone has a chance before their death, you know, to pass on to their children what they have to know. Okay then? Sholach Rav Huna Bar Ovin. Rav Huna Paskin two dinim. Number one, we'll soon see that these dinim seem to contradict one another. Hamafkid Eitzel Chaver Bishtar, the Omer Lohich Zartiv Lecha. If there was a mafkid and a nifkad, and the nifkad claims I returned the object to you, but the mafkid is holding on to a shtar nemah. In this case, we believe the nifkad, the shomer, to say that he returned the object because he has a migu. He could have said nenas. But the second psak, the second ruling of Rav Huna, is shtar kis hayotze al yisomim nishba v'gol. That if a person produces a shtar on this iska, on this deal that he set up with the father during the father's lifetime, in which the father would manage the business, then he can collect from the yorshim with a shvuah. And we don't assume that the money, that half pikadon money, was returned. And Tarte, the Gemara says, these two dinim seem to contradict each other, because on the one end you're saying that hechzartiv is believed with the migu of nensu, and therefore we should put that claim forth on behalf of the Yisomim, because the father himself could have claimed that he returned the deposit, the half of the deposit money, and Migu is believed. That's what he says. So why in the case of Shtar Kiz shouldn't we say that since the father would be Nema to say Chzartiv with the Migu, now we should put forward that claim on behalf of the Yisomim? So the Gemara answers, Shani Hossam, again, as we said before, this issue of Shtar Kis Hayotzim and Yisomim is not dependent, it's not parallel and equivalent to the issue of a Mafkid and a Nifkad, because the Amisa, the Pari, if the father had indeed paid it up, is Meimar Havi Omar, the father would have told his children before his death that he had already paid up this Pikadon, and that would protect them from the Mafkid when he comes to claim the money. Rava Amar Hilchasa, how do we paskin? Like the Dayone Eretz Yisrael, in the case of Shtar Kis, Nishba V'Gove Mechtza.
It means that the mafkid has a right to take a shvua and collect half of the 100 that we discussed that was invested in this business deal. That half, that's a pikadon. And what that means is that if the father during his lifetime had actually paid up and returned that money, he would have told the Yisomim. Amar Mar Zutra Hilchasa Kidayone Gola. But Mar Zutra, on the other hand, says that the halach is like the Dayone Gola. Amale Ravina Lamar Zutra Va'amar Rava Nishpa V'gove Mechza. Rava seems to say just the opposite. Amale Anan Dayone Gola Ipcha Masnisen Le. I have it in the exact reverse, which means that the Dayone Gola were the ones who maintained that Nishpa V'gove, that he collects half, and it was Dafka the Dayone Eretz Yisrael who said Nishpa V'gove Kulo, that through his shvua he can collect the entire sum. Nimtza comes out that even I agree that the halacha is like Rava of Nishpa V'gove Mechtz. Okay, we'll stop here.